so sorry I'm late, but it's the getting into Oxford.
A spell was cast on her vehicle.
Always that.
It's really wonderful to see you all, but on this special occasion...
Get her.
On this special occasion when Dame Maggie Smith is here, and traffic on the highway was the cause.
It was an accident, actually.
Anyway, I'm going to invite our senior fellow to do a citation to explain why we are making you an honorary fellow of Mansfield College. Please.
Should I be standing?
Yes. And it's really lovely to welcome all of you here today. And the great thing is we have our Vice Chancellor here as well. So it's just a special occasion. Maggie, please.
Can you hear me all right? Okay. So I must observe how strange it feels to be a female professor in a black academic gown, standing in front of an audience to deliver a commendation to the woman most famous in the world for playing a female professor in a black academic gown. I'm very honoured as senior fellow at Mansfield to deliver the commendation for Dame Margaret Maggie Smith to an honorary fellowship at Mansfield College. And I just thought I'd start with a quotation. I'm almost crazy with the dear divine angelic. You see, I'm cracked. Her screams, two falls flat upon her face, are too dreadful, as well as the madness with which she ends the play. She cried in reality much, and nothing will cure me but seeing her every night, which I intend to do. If I don't hear her speak in a private room, which Betsy and I are determined to do, I shall be miserable. Uncle W says he had no idea she was so great beyond all imagination. He says she terrifies him out of his senses. Now, this was a letter written in spring 1796 by a young woman called Gabrielle Enthoven after her visit to Drury Lane to see Sarah Siddons play in a tragedy. And I chose it because Gabrielle's enthusiasm resonates with the responses of so many students and colleagues when they heard that Dame Maggie would be appearing in person to receive this recognition at Mansfield. Gabrielle's passion, like ours, testifies to the strength of the culture and tradition of the female actor in the British theatre, which Maggie Smith has enriched through a lifetime career. I work on the theatre of the 17th and 18th centuries, the direction of which changed irrevocably in 1662 when Charles II passed an edict saying female parts should be taken by women. Women became the major attraction in the theatre and new parts were written for them, especially of the kind for which Maggie Smith, like Sarah Siddons, acquired her fame, commanding women. Women whose first look out to the audience from the stage riveted attention and prompted compassion, intellectual challenge, involvement in story. Now we pride ourselves in Mansfield on our own tradition of recognising the virtues and values of women of this kind. And it may not be well known that Maggie Smith's career began in Oxford and specifically on the bit of ground on which this building now stands.
That's right.
In 1952, she played Viola in Twelfth Night in Mansfield College Gardens. Mm-hmm. And I've had the privilege of being present for many of those first performances of young actors at Oxford. I'm one of the senior members for the Oxford University Dramatic Society, and I hope I'll have seen some who will achieve a small measure of the success that Maggie Smith has enjoyed. So, Mansfield awards this honorary fellowship to Dame Maggie Smith on the basis of her distinction in the performing arts. Distinction seems too poor a word for the exceptional contribution she's made across the fields of stage, film, and television. We think she has a special affinity with the values of this college, a resilient commitment to the value of work generally, and the special value of the field in which she excels, a habit of siding with those in trouble and those misunderstood, and of judging on the basis of nothing other than the qualities of the person in front of her. Like Mansfield, she's not afraid to dissent when she sees injustice or inequality or a failure to live up to the highest standards. Her performances are many, varied, and memorable. You want to hear her in conversation with our principal, so I'll just point to a few of those roles. In particular, I think those which made us aware of the complexity of women at every stage in their lives. From the eagerness of her Desdemona in Othello, the charisma of Jean Brodie in the television series of 1968, one of my favourites, The Volatility of Millamant in Congreve's The Way of the World, a part she first played in 1984, The Anxiety of Charlotte Bartlett in A Room with a View, and The Hidden Anguish of Susan in Alan Bennett's Bed Among the Lentils, and more recently, Miss Shepherd in The Lady in the Van. Never concerned to make her roles people we like, she makes them people. Conflicted, complicated, compulsive, and people we know from the inside in ways we hardly know those who are closest to us. So for that capacity, the capacity to remind us of the truth and intensity of drama as a literary medium, the capacity to make us live in and with fictional story, we thank you, Maggie Smith, and we honour you today by making you an honorary fellow of the college.
Well, Dame Maggie Smith, as principal of Mansfield College, it delights me to present you with
Thank
your certificate
you.
As our fellow.
How very lovely. Thank you so much. Well, I would never ever, well, I just can't imagine when I was, what age was I? You
16.
Know more about me.
16.
Isn't that scary? and there were wonderful actors in this Twelfth Night, and alas, they're all up there somewhere. They've all, well, the ones that I knew have alas gone, but they were wonderful, wonderful actors like John Wood.
John Wood, yeah.
And Michael Elliott, who was a wonderful director, and it's amazing to think. And they all took bets, and I was the one who was least likely to do anything.
No!
So I Sit wish down. They were here. I'm furious.
Sit down.
Thank you. Have a seat. Thank you.
Maggie, sitting in the front row is Michael Coveney, a great theatre reviewer and critic. And he happens to live near me in London. And I bumped into him one day, and he said that he'd heard that I was the head of Mansfield College, because he is an Oxford graduate himself. And he said, of course, Mansfield College is where Maggie Smith did her first performance. And, of course, he knew, because he has written the great autobiography.
He knows more about me than I do.
Than you do. and so he said, you know that Maggie Smith began her career. You know, that's where she got her first review. I'm going to actually read the review, which he culled from a newspaper here in the Oxford.
Was there a review?
Yes, there was. In fact,
the Oxford Mail?
Yes, yes,
absolutely. It's in the Oxford Mail.
Wow.
And it says, and the Oxford Mail was more than complimentary. It said, Margaret Smith, whose loveliness has a boyish quality about it, made Olivia's infatuation for her, because you were playing Viola, seems quite natural. I was much struck, says the reviewer, by the simple sincerity of her acting. She approximates very nearly to the Viola of our dreams.
Oh, my God. Who was that?
Yes. Who was that? You want to marry him.
No, he's gone already. He's gone too. They've all gone.
They're all gone. But another person around at that time was a man called Ned Sheeran, who won't be known to the young in the audience, but is very well known to those of us who are older. But Ned Sheeran was one of the great sort of, you know, creative energies in our midst in the 80s and 70s, 80s, not 60s, 70s, 80s. And he says of you, Margaret was simply considered to be the very best actress of our time. So there you go.
I've fallen apart. Before we've
You've
even
fallen
began.
Apart. You've been
Who
picking away
this?
at your microphone. You don't do that when you're on the stage.
Who did? Oh, here, hold on. Look. No.
Anyway, so you're, are you Are you ready? Are you? You're back in touch.
I don't know if it. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
So I just wanted to ask you about. I mean, do you remember being here? Apparently, you shivered in the cold. And
I don't remember the shivering. I remember it raining, and because we were outside, and I was truly so scared. That I do remember. I remember being so frightened and thinking, if it rains, I won't have to do it. Uh-huh. But we just kind of went on, I think, in the rain a lot of the time, which was okay when it got right to the end, when you said, rain, it raineth every day.
Yes, so it seemed suitable.
It seemed appropriate.
But Maggie, you are an Oxford girl. I mean, you grew up,
yeah.
I mean, you really were brought up in Oxford, and you went to Oxford High School, and wanted to go to RADA, but your parents were sort of rather fearful of the sin city that London would, and that RADA would be a kind of terribly corrupting influence. So you ended up going to what was then existed, which was the drama school that was attached to the Oxford Playhouse that was created, I think, by some... academics, some dons at Oxford who...
There was a woman teacher called Isabel, mm-hmm. Isabel Van Beers. And that's all I can remember. Oh, and there was also a man in it who, can you believe, was in the Archers. But that was 100 years ago. He played a character in that.
And that then became linked in some way to the Oxford University Dramatic Society, and so you did it quite, didn't you do performances?
No, the reason I was in the Oxford, asked
production.
By the Oxford University Dramatic Society, because they weren't allowed, they didn't have any women members. Isn't that frightful? They didn't have women members, so they used people from outside.
So they had to co-opt some women from somewhere else.
There were no women members
in.
Of ours.
Yes.
Is anybody here a member of ours? The Oxford University Drama.
Look, there's some hands up there. Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes, up there. A coterie of women up there.
Great.
And we've just one of our latest graduates, Helena Wilson. Is now taking part in the Lady from the Sea at the Donmar.
Oh, right.
And she's just been in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
But they've moved the Lady from the Sea into the Caribbean.
That's right, they've moved
to
the Caribbean.
I read about it this
morning.
That's
right.
I didn't know how
yes.
that works.
Well, we'll have to go and see.
Yeah,
we'll go together,
to
shall we? but that start, I mean, I looked at the history of all of this, and you're quite a quick acceleration of your career, because that was 1952, but by 1956 you were already on Broadway in New York performing.
Yes, but that's because there were Oxford reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So I did quite a lot of work in cabaret at Camembert's and things like that. It's ridiculous to think of it. Look at you all being so serious.
And then came back and...
No, what happened was one of the reviews we did here at Oxford, when we went to the Fringe in Edinburgh, long before it was sort of really thought of. And that review came to a little tiny theatre in London, which has since gone where everything else has gone. And somebody there saw me and from New York and took me... to do this review in New York in 56.
I just want to tell people about how many awards you've had. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable. I nearly fainted when I read it. I said you actually have received 5 Best Actress Awards from the Evening Standards. The Evening Standards Awards are a big thing, and you've won Best Actress 5 times. You've received a Tony Award for Private Lives. You've won, you've won... Oscars. How many Oscars have you got now?
Let me think.
you've got.
I've sort of got 1.5.
No, you've got 2. You've got 2. I mean, you're one of the.
I have to put you straight because I certainly didn't do a television of Jean Brodie. That was another actress who was frightfully good. Who was also somewhere.
No, you did the film.
Else.
I love the film.
I did do the film, but I didn't do the television.
I've made my life trying to be Miss Jean Brodie ever since.
You succeeded. You
of course.
Succeeded.
But you've won BAFTAs. I mean, you've won 4 BAFTAs. Or, you know, you've done an incredible, and it all comes from.
But I don't count.
An incredible range of great performances, and I just wanted to ask: do you now do film mainly rather than stage?
I haven't done anything for a bit. I haven't done this. I haven't done theatre for quite a long time.
Do you miss it?
Dreadfully, but I just honestly don't think I've got the stamina anymore.
But
I really don't. I mean, only because I don't think I can cope with the number of performances a week. If it were in repertory, yes.
I want people to just know the full range of what you've done, because many of the young in our audience will know you from the things that have been mentioned, you know, from Harry Potter, from Downton Abbey, from A Lady in the Van, from The Marigold Hotel, from all those more recent films. But I mean, when I was a student, and I went to see you in Hedda Gabler. I went to see you in tons of things that you were in you know, Sitting in the Gods, let me tell you. But you did so many amazing roles. You were in lots of Shakespeare, Antony and Cleopatra. You were Lady Macbeth.
Was in Canada.
You did a lot of that, yeah. Okay, well, fine, okay.
It was in a big field in Canada.
Oh, right. But you did Private Lives. You did lots of...
I did Private Lives, for which I did not get a Tony Award.
Why do you remember that?
I remember it, because I did get a Tony Award, but not for that.
Let's just talk about Miss Jean Brodie, because that's one of those roles that people just, you know, they always feel that they can't imagine anybody else playing it.
Well, I have to say, it is an absolutely foolproof part. I mean, I don't think anybody can fail in that part. And I think I wish I'd done it in the theatre, because I think that would be much, much more interesting. I think it would be nearer the book.
You were in it with Robert Stevens, who was your first husband.
Yes.
And that was... But you were the kind of... Yes, he is. But you were an electric pair on the screen. I mean, it was a great coupling.
We did mostly in the theatre. I don't think we did much together on screen. But no, we did a lot of theatre.
A lot of theatre together, yeah. And I wanted to ask you about then moving to film. What was the first big shift to film?
I've never really liked film. Well, because in the theatre you can create some sort of an illusion. Maybe the people at the back have got a better idea of an illusion than these people here. But in the theatre, you can create an illusion. The film is really relentless, and it's also there's Mr. Weinstein. But we won't.
Well, I have to tell you, on my bit of paper,
that's not been a problem.
On my bit of paper, I do have Mr. Weinstein mentioned.
Do you?
I just wanted to. There's a thing going on now called a hashtag Me Too. And women are coming out and saying, "Did it ever happen to you? Whether Mr. Weinstein's
in your
day?"
If that had happened, have had more Oscars. And I really do. I do think that there are some ladies that I can think of who should thank him.
Because he did help.
Because
him
he helped them get Oscars. That's true.
Yes, but what about in your day? There must have been quite a bit of that going on as well.
Well, do you know, I don't know, because
people can't imagine anybody taking you on.
The second time I went and got an Oscar, I went there, but I couldn't go for the first because we were doing an opening performance at the National Theatre. And I didn't believe it. I didn't know that it was. Of course, it's bigger now than it was then, I suppose. But I always regretted I didn't manage to go the first time. Because I think it's very grand to get best.
Yes.
Supporting seems a bit kind of sad. That's why I said it's one and a half.
But well, that's why you're calling it a half.
Well, it feels like it's a half.
Oh, no.
No, it isn't. But it would have been...
Which was that for? Which was the supporting actor?
The half.
Yes, what was
the half? The half was for a thing called California Suite.
Oh, yes.
And my other half was Michael Caine.
Uh-huh. And which was the full Oscar?
Brody.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah. And what about the BAFTAs?
I don't remember. That's not being affected. I don't remember because everything seems a long time ago. Not quite as long ago as when I was in the garden here. This is a wonderful building. This is terrific.
You are, in fact, the first performer in this building. That's why we had to have it this way, because you performed here for your first performance,
and you're our
first performance.
Oh, I'm very
this is the Hotung Auditorium, and you are here. It was funded by a very fine man called Sir Joseph Hotung. I wanted to ask you about a number of other things. One of the things that Simon Callow says about you is, he says, the thing about Maggie is that one idea simply put to Maggie can instantly go through her whole performance. And that you somehow... And he says, she's ecstatic at such moments. And he says she becomes the most beautiful, physical, and the most kind of alive woman you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, my.
Did you know that he said that? I had a conversation with him on the phone only last week. Yes.
Well, that's very, very, very nice of him.
He was in
Room with the View.
Yes, he was. He was in that with you. Michael Coveney, sitting there in the front row, says that when you are putting a part together, that you chisel away at your work with the monastic dedication of a recluse.
How do you know that? I could be out and about and doing all sorts of things. I mean, I do think about it a lot, yes, but I don't know if I do that. But I'll take your word for it. You know more about me, as I say, than I know. So.
Well, but it is. I have to tell you. I know you don't like reading reviews or anything about yourself. But I will whisper in your ear some of the fine things that are said about you in this book, because you did. One of the actors that you acted with was a man who has, I think, gone, Brian Bedford.
Yes. Alas, yes.
Alas, but he also says that. That you were, one of the things that you did was you really worked on the text. You became so, you kind of chewed at it like a, he says, that you were like a dog with a bone, that you would work endlessly at the text to make it come alive. You'd find the energy in it.
Well, without a text, we would be nowhere.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing.
But you would try to get sort of real tease out sort of stuff from a text that some other people just wouldn't see there.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think, and it depends on the text. I mean, there's sometimes you can go on and on and on with some of them, but...
But you see, that's the thing that, I know that you don't think this of yourself, but that's the thing, it's your intellect that comes through that. The fact that you grip, you really chew on it want to pull out...
I tell you what I found... The most helpful thing about the whole thing was studying a text and studying the punctuation.
Yes, because then the meaning comes out.
And it's very interesting because some parts are written in a different way. I mean, for instance, Millamant in Way of the World, who talks at great speed and goes on, all her punctuation is in dashes. There aren't sort of commas and... Mm. And I think that tells you so much.
About the energy that you expect there to be in there.
So you've
got that sort of forensic way of going at things.
I don't see how else you could go at it.
I mean, I think my young actors up there, you see, are quite interested to know. They're waving at you. They're up in this sort of corner. There are three of them up there, you see, on the right
side. I don't
see
any wave.
Wave, go on. Wave.
Hello.
That's right. And you see, they want to know the Maggie Smith way. And I think that one of the things is that you do actually go very carefully at getting the meaning out of the text.
I also think it's very important to know what is sad or straight, and what is amusing. I think it's the balance between very serious and funny is so narrow. This happened to me once in I was doing a play, and the producer came round and said, "I want you to understand this is a very sensitive play. It's about this young man who's listening to music, and it's very serious. So the author has asked me to ask you to not get any laughs, to play it absolutely straight," which I did, and I found really interesting that you could do that you could be amusing or not. But what was interesting was the producer came out afterwards and said, "Put the laugh back." So, but it's that kind of where we are always. You know, if the most serious things are always verging on. And I think that's what colours a lot of things. But that's just me.
That's one of the things that you are particularly noted for, is that way in which you can introduce humour into things that aren't obviously humourful. You can find a way of doing that.
But see, I think most things are kind of... Well, if we didn't find things...
We'd weep if we didn't find things.
Yes, I remember that being said. You know, laugh. What is it? Cry? Laugh and you laugh alone. What is that? Cry.
Laugh and the world laughs with you.
Laugh and the world laughs with you. And I remember Kenneth Williams saying, "Cry and you ruin your mascara." but that's very true.
On the business of acting, I mean, it's kind of interesting. In this book, Michael Coveney uses a quote from Edith Evans, and the quote from Edith Evans is one I want to test on you, because Edith Evans, apparently a great actress, long before any of us, but Edith Evans apparently said, "You have to have been desperately unhappy to play comedy so that nothing frightens you anymore."
You have to be desperately
unhappy to play comedy, because then nothing frightens you anymore. And you can't do tragedy unless you have known absolute happiness, because then you know you are safe.
That's absolutely... I think that's right. Uh-huh. When did she tell you that?
I never spoke to her about it. She wrote it somewhere.
Well, I acted with her, and she never mentioned it to me. But she was very frightened, which again I was blithe and awful, because it didn't cross my mind to be quite as frightened as Dame Edith became, because I mean that happens with age, I think. Well, I know, and I think she kind of lost her nerve, and that's awful, and maybe that's why I don't go back to the theatre, because I have a fear now that I will be just so frightened. But that did happen to her, and that's awful.
Yes.
It was awful.
I want to
it's also very funny, I have to say. <was it? laughs>
You see, what about the lady in the van?
What about the lady?
Well, you did it on the stage as well as in film.
Yes, it was exhausting on stage, but just physically it was, and I was glad it was filmed. Except that I don't know what was this country. I suppose it rained most of the time we did that. But it was. I don't know whether which was. I think the film was absolutely intriguing, because I really...
you can actually...
Then I didn't mind about that, because it was all shot to hell anyway, so you just think, oh, well, you know, whatever.
I could actually smell you when I watched that film.
I know. Do you know that one night when they... we stopped... it was a weekend, actually. They came back, and the van had been slept in.
By somebody else?
By, yes, the vagrants. That's not too nice, is it? But they all went around saying, don't tell Maggie, don't tell Maggie. I found out later.
And you found out later. And which were shocked and horrified. Everybody in this audience is going to want to know about your being Professor McGonagall.
Well, that's extraordinary. It went on from when they were this high to, you know.
Yes, I mean, look, they're big.
And look at what Daniel is doing. He's a terrific actor. And Emma. But I don't know what to tell you about that. Most of the time, it was just sort of doing lots of reaction shots.
Oh, give us one.
In a big hat. Well, the other thing is, Downing, Alan Rickman and I, we said we'd run out of reaction shots because we'd looked amazed, we'd looked sad, and that was when they'd done all these wonderful things with the children. They were all rather tired and exhausted. They would turn the camera around on us, and we would go, So that's what I remember about it mostly.
I have to tell you that Alan Rickman, a great friend of mine, came here to dinner at Mansfield College.
Did he?
Yes, he did. And I stayed the night, actually, over in the lodgings. And I didn't tell anybody he was coming because I thought the whole of Oxford would end up in the quad. And we had to ban the rest of the Oxford from tonight, I have to tell you. But and so what happened was then all the students came into dinner, and it was like watching meerkats. They all sort of would go...
Oh.
And then they realised who was there. It was very, very funny.
What a lovely,
yes, lovely man. And it's
and
terrible
a wonderful
to lose him.
Too, yeah.
What about Downton Abbey? Oh, but everybody
and
loved
again,
it.
And again, it was like sitting forever in a wig and a hat. I had one hat that was absolutely ghastly. It was like wearing the Albert Hall. It was this great round thing, and that's what I. One remembers all the pain of being so, you know, because it's the amount of time it all.
Did
takes.
You ever sort of ad lib? Because one felt that a lot of those lines you could have invented
no,
yourself.
I didn't because I don't think Lord Fellows would like it.
Yes.
No,
but
I didn't.
But it is the thing that now lives on in the memory of your sort of, you've taken over from a handbag. You've taken over from that.
Yeah, Jamie, she got stuck with that one.
But you've now kind of taken over as being the person who kind of people think of as grandeur.
As the Dowager.
The Dowager.
Dowager,
yes.
Duchess.
Do you think there will be a revival at Christmas?
They talk about a film.
Oh, they're going to do the film?
My lips are sealed.
Do they give you silence money to keep your lips sealed?
No, but you have to keep. We had to keep so quiet about the script
and about folk dying.
Yes, yeah, so we had to sort of leave them, hand them in. You know, couldn't leave them lying about. Just in case people found out what happened in the story.
It might be the Russians.
We're still waiting to find out what happened. Nobody ever found out. Don't tell.
I won't tell Lord Fellows.
No.
If I see him in the House of Lords, I won't.
Don't say anything.
I promise you I won't. I want to ask you, though, when you look back on this fabulous career of yours, I mean, it's been utterly amazing. Our greatest, I mean, considered to be now a national treasure. I know people hate that expression, but you are. And also, but just, you know, the greatest actress of our time.
Oh, come what off
a,
it.
What, yes, what...
I won't tell what, Jude, you said.
What's the best? What's the best bit when you look back? What do you think, you know, for you, what was the best? The best bits?
Do you know... I don't know. I can't sort of separate it out. What I find extraordinary is that it's so long.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is long.
Think
and it's
of
still
how long
on.
Ago it was when the garden was here.
I mean, have you seen the photographs in this book?
No.
Oh, they're fabulous.
Are they?
Yes, you're gorgeous.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. You're a thing of beauty. And, I mean, honestly, there's a fabulous thing here of you with Laurence Olivier.
Is it really?
Yes. Tell us about that. You were Desdemona to his Laurence Olivier.
What?
To his Laurence Olivier. To his Olivier. He never departed from being who he was.
No,
that's true to say.
He didn't
step outside of himself.
But then I was really frightened.
Were you?
Mm.
Because you were...
Well, we were all frightened. You witnessed that, Pauline, your friend Pauline.
Pauline Melville, great actors here in the front room, was in that company with you, yeah.
Yes. He was very, very... because he was, you know, he was the big deal, and he was jolly difficult to act with because he was sort of distant. Mm-hmm. I put it down to the black makeup. I thought, you know, you couldn't touch him because it all came off, and I did end up with a lot more on me than he had at the end after he murdered me and done various things. But no, it was very frightening working with him. And also what was scary is that he knew it all before we started rehearsing.
Uh-huh.
He was word perfect, wasn't he? Do you remember that? And and when we did the reading of the play on the very first day of rehearsal, much to our alarm, he kind of did it. He was full out, and we were all really. I don't think I've ever been so frightened. And also, Derek Jacobi was in that, and he was. We talk about it now, being terrified of this person who was giving it everything, and we were going shaking with the script. But it was an extraordinary thing to. It was an amazing part to get. I to this day I don't know why, because it's very difficult to imagine somebody going from, you know, review and comedy, a real comedy, to that. But I'm glad I saw the funny side of it, which because I'd never have got through it at all.
And what about Private Lives? Because that was one of the other great...
Private Lives, I tell you what. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful play. And I did it forever, it seemed to me. I, you know, did a long run and then did it in America. And I have to say, my son did it not long ago, and it was a much better production than when I was... It was so good.
Uh-huh.
And it was a joy to see it very freshly, you know, because it was, I don't know, it was much better production.
Uh-huh. He's fabulous in Oslo just now. I just saw him
yes,
a couple of weeks ago. It's
different
wonderful.
Thing
very
too,
different.
Yeah.
Who do you? I mean, there is a generation of rather fine young people.
Oh yes.
I mean, your own son is Toby is one of that.
I mean, there are many,
yes.
Many.
Who amongst the women?
Who of the women? Well, I mean, I don't know the young.
Yes, but of the sort of Helen McCrory?
Helen McCrory.
Mm-hmm.
I first saw her in on television, oddly enough. Yes, Helen McCrory, but I don't know. Young is what? Much younger than Helen.
She's middle aged now.
Indeed. So that's sort of where I linger.
Have you ever felt it's taken you over a character?
No, quite honestly, I think life would be just impossible if that happened. But I think it happens more in film because that always mystifies me how people sustain it for that length of time. And the theatre is easier to hang on to it because you know where you're going. You have time to prepare before it, and you go from beginning, the middle, the end. In a film, you never know. You can start anywhere, and the film actors who can do that, I think, are extraordinary because it's a very difficult thing. So I think they go home with it, like. Daniel Day-Lewis, doesn't he kind of go on and on and on?
Yes, and lives the part. And
yeah,
lives that, yeah,
very tricky for anybody else who's trying to live with him, I would have thought. But it,
especially
you know,
with the lady from in the van.
Obviously helped him, but I don't know. It's a good feeling when it's over, oh, that's all I know. And if you went home with it, it would be intolerable.
One of your latest films that I actually loved was The Quartet, that Ronnie Harwood wrote the script for, you know. And Billy Connolly, most unlikely, was in it too.
Oh, yeah. What a joy.
Joy,
he was
he? And Tom Courtney was your beloved in it. It was rather lovely, actually.
Yeah.
It was a really rather lovely film.
It was fun to do. And it was fun because it was the first film Dustin Hoffman had directed,
that's right,
and that was
sort
of, and that was kind of a joy too because he knew what hell it was. You know, when you waited for hours and hours and hours for them to light or whatever, and then you're expected to just get up and
perform.
Yes, and on. And Dustin understood that. He just knew when people had sagged beyond any kind of willingness to just get up and do it. But that sustaining of a part through a film is what, although I'm going off the rails here, but it. What is interesting is if you're in a film and you have a good part in a film, if you're then you go through it. I've been in films where you would do a cameo and you find yourself you're in films with wonderful people that you never meet. That happened to me at the beginning. I was in films with all these people and I never clapped eyes on them because you just go in and
people don't realise that they'll do your bit. And then it means that you wouldn't necessarily see.
It's what is laughingly known as a cameo part. You just nod in like a thing, and you do your bit. But when you're really involved in a film, then it's intriguing because you know what's going on day by day by day.
Well, they do talk about some actors being generous, and other actors being, you know, less generous in the amount of space they give to the other, you know. Some people sort of take up all the oxygen and are not generous.
Yes, but and Olivier was very into the external things about acting. You know, he had the teeth right and the nose, and you know, he was into all that rather than being deeply inside.
Have you ever played anybody that you feel, my God, I feel like Miramont. I feel that that's me.
No, because the joy is it isn't me. It's that's the joy, is to be somebody else.
But you're yourself are actually pretty terrific we think. Don't we?
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Maggie Smith, terrific as an actor, terrific as a human being.
Thanks.
It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much.